The struggle is real for women of color in leadership. From battling race and cultural biases to silencing that relentless inner critic, it's a lot. Welcome to Unshackled Leadership, a lantern for Black women. Here we will share, teach, and laugh, yes, I said laugh, as we guide you from just being excellent to stepping boldly into your zone of genius. I'm Joya Jefferson Nuri, your host and ICF certified leadership coach. Ready to level up together? Let's do this. Thanks for joining us again. You know, as a Black mother, I hold deep concern for all Black children. Every single one of them feels like they're my own. I fought tirelessly to keep the youth in my family out of the criminal justice system. But sadly, I couldn't win the battle for many of their friends. Like so many of us, I often ask, can we rewrite the future for today's youth and for the generations that come after them? Well, today I'm going to introduce you to Elizabeth Frederick, who is leading us in these steps as the executive director of Avenues for Justice. Avenue for Justice is revolutionizing the criminal justice system, one life at a time. As a trailblazer in alternative to incarceration programs for youth, AFJ has been a lifeline for New York City's court-involved and at-risk youth, replacing prison cells with opportunity and purpose. Now, every year they empower 500 young people ages 13 to 24 through their no-cost, ongoing court advocacy and transformative program called HIRE. And HIRE is spelled H-I-R-E. From workforce training and education to mental health support and mentoring, AFJ equips the next generation with the tools they need to rise above and succeed. On average, 94% of their court-involved participants avoid reconviction and ending up back in the criminal justice system. Elizabeth Frederick, thank you for joining us here on Unshackled Leadership.
Thank you so much for having me. And please feel free to call me Liz Frederick.
Okay. All right, Liz. Liz, my first question is, why? Why you? Why this?
Well, you know, it's always been a no-brainer in that if we are really going to invest in our future, it starts with our young people. Mm-hmm. And so I've come from a background of civil servants growing up. You know, my parents worked in the nonprofit sector around women and children. So this is almost innate, and this is in my DNA. And so I've committed my professional journey to empowering the next generation and empowering our young people.
Bravo. Bravo. Before we go into the workings of AFJ, I want to get your take on why this problem continues. Why youth between the ages of 13 and 24 get caught up in this? And it may seem like the answers are obvious, you know, poverty, upbringing, no parents, limited access to parents or adult role models. Those are the things we say, but you're in it every day. What would be your answer to the why?
Well, the why starts, first of all, with the narrative. How we are talking about our young people. And I think that in the discussion, we have to be very mindful of who our young people are and why they have contact with the criminal justice system. And I refer it to the criminal system, because what we're trying to do at Avenues for Justice is put the justice back in the criminal system. And it all boils down to, when you look at the young people that we work with and their communities that they come from, it's because they do not have access to opportunity and exposure and resources. So really, when we start at the why, it's we have to examine what is going on in their communities that is bringing them in contact with law enforcement and with the criminal system. And we have to look at, in terms of access and exposure, three components that we really build on at Avenues for Justice, centered on education, employment, and mental health.
The Kellogg Foundation, the off-branch of the people who make our cornflakes. The Kellogg Foundation for decades has been focusing on youth and food, feeding young people, teaching young people about food. And about 5 years ago, they woke up and said, if they weren't also influencing the people in their households, those adults, it really wouldn't matter if you trained the 8-year-old on locally grown organic food, if the adult didn't speak the language, and if there were no resources to eat at that level, and the resources being education and willpower. Looking at the work you do, would you say that it is the parents that you must now address, the not just parents, the adults in their lives?
At Avenues for Justice, when we work with a young people, first of all, our approach is very individualized, right? So we meet a young person as they come through our door, and we make an assessment of not only what's going on with their legal proceedings, but what's going on in the home environment. You can't treat a young person in isolation without treating the family unit. And that's typically where a lot of the issues that we are seeing with our young people start. And so education is not just about empowering a young person, but it's also about educating the family unit and working with the parents to provide a positive environment. So what's going on at home? What's going on with the caretaker, whether, you know, the guardian, whether it's a mother or a father? And what can we do as an organization to empower the family as a unit? So even if you're looking at, you know, like you were saying, the Kellogg Foundation and food, and part of what we do in our higher up program is we have workshops around healthy eating. So we teach our young people the types of foods that they should be eating. And we're also aware of the food items that are available to them in their community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, based on, and we have a lot of young people who have access to, you know, in New York City, it's just your local corner store, like we like to call it, bodega, but there's healthy options there. So if we're teaching our young people how to cook at our community centers, and we have two community centers in the Lower East Side and Harlem, but we're not involving the family unit, what good is that? Because they're making healthy meals at our community centers, but what happens when they go home, right? So we have to work with the family. And so in addition to just providing what some people think are just basic services, we're also providing groceries and the necessary ingredients to their caretakers and their guardians, and saying, listen, this, in order for your young person to flourish at home, these are the items that you need to be buying for them, and this is how we're going to support you.
What does that look like? Coming into the household, their child has gotten into trouble with the law. You're doing the rehabilitation, transformation with the young person. You know that you have to now talk to their adults. What does that look like? How does that approach? What does it look like with the adults?
So The bloodline at Avenues for Justice is our court advocates. And what makes us very different from our peer organizations is that the moment that a young person walks through our doors, they are with the same court advocate throughout the entire process. So if they're with us for 1, 2, or 3 years, they have the same court advocate. So we're not passing them from the court advocate to a case manager to a social worker. And so assessment with a young person starts with intake. Getting to the court advocates will do the intake to see what's going on. What are their needs? How can we help them? And the assessment, the second process is talking to the family unit and understanding really the support level that that young person needs, in addition to our court advocacy and our wraparound and enrichment services.
So you go into the home and you teach them to cook. You bring them to the community center so they know. How are they trained, the parents?
So the parents, we have a social worker on site who works with the young person and involves the family unit as well. And okay. So it's really a discussion. And it's coming up with an individualized action plan with the young person and the parent so that we can maximize success for them. And so it's more than just having them come to our community centers. It's really educating them and providing support for them. And for whatever services that the parents need that we can't do in-house, we refer them to peer organizations to provide that support. And so what we're really trying to do is to provide a continuum of care.
You said that everything is so personalized. And everything I read about your organization, that's the part that got me the most. The person will, it's personalized to the young person who has gotten into trouble. And it's not cookie cutter, like the criminal justice system would be. Okay. Or the criminal system would be. Right. And like you said, you want to put justice back in there. Okay. Right. So can you talk to us about what happens, how you first connect with the young person who has gotten into trouble? And then take us through the process, please.
So we have two populations that we work with. We have our court-involved young people. These are young people who have active legal proceedings, and then we have our at-risk youth. So these are young people that do not have any active cases, have not had a touch with law enforcement, but community members, family members, the school system reach out to us and say, listen, we have a young person who appears that they may be going down the wrong path. And so we work with them. And so between the two.
So this is prevention.
So the at-risk is prevention.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And when you think about alternative to incarceration work, that's where the focus really should be, prevention. Why are we waiting for young people to go through the criminal justice system? It should be at the preventative level, correct? And so what we're trying to do at Avenues for Justice is to provide those preventative services for those young people by creating safe spaces in our community centers where they can come to after school. Because we found, and and research shows this, and there's evidence around this, that young people, what's the time frame where they get into trouble? It's after school, right? Because they don't have access to after school activities. And so we've opened up our community centers for young people after school to come. And it's a safe space where they can be in community with their peers. They can be in community with our court advocates. We have program staff, from our program activities coordinator on site to our social worker. And we have workshops available for them. We have tutors, academic tutors, to help them support them in school. And it's really a space for them to come and be young people.
To actually have their childhood, to actually have it. The second population. You said you work with two separate populations. Tell me about the ones who've already gotten into trouble.
So With the ones that have already gotten into trouble and have active legal proceedings, our court advocates appear before judges. So a lot of our referrals come from the court system.
First off, let's back up. Court advocate. Define that.
So our court advocates are... They're more than the title, and they're more than their job description. And they are the focal point of the organization, and they're really where the magic happens, because they're more than social workers, they're more than youth workers. They almost become a parent for our young people. And I say that because they're accessible 24/7 regardless. And so our court advocates will have young people calling them saying, listen, I don't have a meal at home, and they will make that happen. Listen, I'm having issues with completing my homework, and they will partner them with a volunteer tutor. Or I just need somebody to speak to at 9 p.m. at night, and our court advocates are there.
Okay.
So when I describe our court advocate, just think of a person that goes above and beyond for our young people and is almost the support system that they need access to.
That's a tremendous job for someone to take on. That is a tremendous commitment to humanity, to say that I am going to escort a young person out of harm's way and they can access me any time of the day. That is, my hat's off to your court advocates. My hat's off to your whole team for what you do. But that's tremendous. So we were talking about the children who, the young people, because we're going from 13 to 24, mm-hmm. the young people who are moving, have gotten into trouble, and they're assigned their court advocate. So can you pick up from there?
So they're assigned their court advocate. And based on their case, it depends on their case. So if they have a case, they might be mandated to our program for a year. They might be mandated for 60 days. It really depends on the severity of the case, and mm-hmm. it depends on really the judge. And so what the court advocate does is they work with the court system. So they work with a defense attorney representing the young person and the ADA to really maximize on the best option for the young person, being that in essence, what we want to do and what we strive to do at Avenues for Justice is to get our young people youthful offender status. And what that means is that their case is sealed so that they are not stigmatized by that for the rest of their life. So that doesn't impact them when they go look for a job.
So you want them tried as children and not as adults.
They are tried as children, not as an adult. Yes.
Okay. So, and you said it depends on the severity of the case.
Right. And it really depends on the young person too, right? Because there's so much that a court advocate can do for a young person, but that young person has to want to make the change. And so when they, you know, the court system refers to it as you've earned your youthful status, youthful offender status. And I remind that our young people that you haven't earned it. You've worked towards changing your life around, and you've achieved it based on your own accomplishments.
There's a lot of pressure. You were talking about the youth wanting to make that change. But all people want family. All people want to feel like you belong somewhere. And so often, even with raising the young people in my life, and I mentioned in the beginning, some of them you can't hold on to. They get stuck in the system. They're gone. Mm-hmm. But it's because they found family in the street.
Right.
They found loyalty from the people in the street, even though they're committing crimes. They were fulfilling the need that our society tells you, you must have that tennis shoe, you must drive that car, you must wear that jacket in order to feel worthy. And so the pull is, you're saying, be good and get this youth status and go on your merry way and put your life together. But then there's this pull of community, family, culture, society that says you're not worthy unless you can do this. And if you're not given the resources, if you're not, didn't have the parenting, your parents didn't have the resources, nobody taught you that you have to earn that, you did a job, and you'll have that in 20 years, you're going to go to the street. If you can get fast money as opposed to slow money, the pull is tremendous. How do you fight that? How do you pitch the battle against that?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And our court advocates have lived experiences, and that's what they can offer to our young people because they've been in their shoes. We have two court advocates on staff who have served 25 years to life, right? And so they bring their lived experiences and they explain to our young people that when they were incarcerated or when they were out in the streets, it's because they didn't have a program like Avenues for Justice. Because if they didn't, that pull would not be as strong, right? And so what they offer to our young people is that we understand that there's peer pressure. We understand that, you know, it looks lucrative to be on the block selling drugs than to go through an internship program where you're only making $17 per hour. But if you choose to go down that route, that's what happened to me. Right. And so we also have program graduates who have completed the program and have come back as court advocates to lend their experience. And I think it's a difference when you talk to young people and you say, oh, you should be doing X, Y, and Z, or if you don't do X, Y, and Z, this is what's going to happen. Then when they hear from people who have lived experiences and say, listen, this is what is going to happen to you. I'm prime example, but this is who you can be if you choose to turn your life around. And this is what we're going to do to support you in that journey. And it's a journey. It's not a quick fix. And that's why we don't put a time stimulation as at Avenues for Justice as to how long we can work with a young person, because again, it differs. I might have one client where it's going to take 1 year for us to really successfully turn their lives around. And I might have another participant who's going to keep coming back to us for 3 years. And that's okay. As long as we know that they really want to turn their lives around, we will always be there.
That's excellent. I said in the open something I pulled from your website that I felt was compelling, but I'm not sure if I understand it. It says, on average, 93% of your court-involved participants avoid reconviction within 3 years of enrollment into the program. What does that mean?
So it's actually 94% of our young people. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that, you know, in terms of alternative to incarceration, success or impact is tracked by recidivism, right? And recidivism is reconviction or reincarceration rates. So what that means is that if a young person has been with Avenues for Justice for 3 years, 94% of them are going to be successful, meaning that they're not going to go back to the criminal justice system. They're not going to get rearrested. They're not going to get reconvicted, and they're not going to get reincarcerated.
Those are incredible numbers. I wonder what the numbers are for places like Boys and Girls Clubs and other organizations like yours that don't do it the same way as you do it. Do you think because you have the court advocacy as part of the program, your success is so great?
Our success is so great because we're not just helping with the legal aspect, right? We're positioning them again for success through internship, through employment, through making sure that when they come through our doors, if they're not enrolled in school, we're going to re-enroll them. We're going to make sure that they have the academic support that they need. When they come through our doors and they have some, they need mental health wellness care, we're going to provide them. Mm-hmm. We're going to provide that for them. Mm-hmm. So we're successful because we're addressing key components that young people are facing in their mm-hmm. daily lives.
Mm-hmm. Who are your partners when you send someone for a mental health consultation, et cetera? Who are your partners?
So our partners are other organizations. And, you know, what we saw from the pandemic, particularly, you know, from the onset of the pandemic, is that the need for mental health care was heightened, mm-hmm. right? And
for
so
everybody.
The city, for everybody. And the city was really backlogged in terms of wait times and referrals. And when you look at our population, they are so used to being shuffled around that even if we do make a referral to another organization, what's the likelihood that they're really going to go there? Mm-hmm. And that's why in the past year, we've invested in having a social worker on site, because we want to provide that continuum of care in-house so that they don't feel as though, you know, I have to go to point A, I have to go to this organization. And then if I need help with mental health, I need to go to this organization.
So they can stay in-house and have their counseling right there in your facility.
Yes.
That's very good.
And I think that's what really differentiates us from our peer organization, is that we provide as many in-house, on-site services for young people.
Okay.
In addition to that, because of the safety issues that, you know, our young people have, where they can't travel from one borough to the next borough.
There's no money. There's no time. It's not safe sometimes. Yeah.
And so we offer all of our services on a hybrid platform. So in addition to on-site, they can also get them online. And that's really the difference too. Okay. And that's really where our success lies in.
With your success and your stats of success being so high, why aren't you being mimicking? Why don't people mimic you all over the city of New York and across the country?
So 6 years ago, we codified our model for replication. So we do have a codification that is ready to be replicated beyond the city. But I think that our secret sauce is in our community-centered approach, right? Mm-hmm. So we are in the communities where our young people live, and our staff is in the communities as well. And I think that's the hardest part to replicate in a program such as ourselves. And we've been very strategic in our growth as well. And I think, you know, growth really has to be organic. And it's not about, you know, just because we're so successful, now we need to replicate at a higher rate. I think it's also about the fact that we've been around for 45 years and we are known in the court system. We are known in our communities. And that's really the essence of who we are at Avenues for Justice.
That's excellent. There is this Black people have a reputation for being in the criminal justice system. It is assumed that our young people are criminals, whether they are or not. We know this from who gets pulled over by the police, who gets stopped walking down the street, who gets followed in the department store for stealing. If you come up and you believe that to be true, I believe that to be true. It was more intense when I was young, when I was in that period of time of 13. For me, it might have been more like 11 to 19, but mm-hmm. where all day long, you're trying to prove what you're not. All day long, everywhere you go, you have to prove you're not stupid. You have to prove you're not a thief. You have to prove that you got here, even if there was affirmative action.
Mm-hmm.
Affirmative action may have got you, DEI may have got you in the door, but you still have to be able to stay there. as you are working with these young people, they know what the world thinks of them. Whether you've in the prevention program or the ones you have kept out of jail, there's no second time. Yeah. But they're still Black, Latino, Asian in this country. What do you say to them about that? Even though you're doing all of this, you just may not be finished with fighting the battle.
That's a great question. And that's why what we're doing is a movement. And I say that because as a movement, it means that it's evolving and it's continual. And it's really important for us as court advocates, as leadership, to show up and be accountable to our young people and to advocate, uplift, and create pathways for change for them. And for us to really impart on them that change is not overnight. Mm-hmm. Change is gradual and change is work. And so we are going to partner with them to just, it starts with changing the narrative, right? Changing the narrative around who they are as young people, changing the words that are used to describe them, right? And helping them understand that they come from unique circumstances where they are positioned at a higher probability for failure, but that we are going to work with them to help ensure that they are success, that they are successful. And being successful is not one time. It's gradual and it's a process. And it's really helping to empower them, right? You're not going to effectively change somebody if they don't feel empowered. And you can't do that without giving them skill sets, right? And so that's really what we're trying to do at Avenues for Justice.
I know in my coaching, and I work with, anybody listening to the show knows, I work with women of color. Mm-hmm. The thing we approach first, no matter what you write down that you want to get a coach for, mm-hmm. we have to go to that very brutal inner critic. Mm-hmm. That voice in your head that constantly tells you what you're not. Mm-hmm. Do you find that that becomes an issue for these young people who want to break free of cultural norms and patterns from their neighborhood? Do you find that they struggle with self-worth?
I think as Black people and as people of color, we all struggle with self-worth. And I lean into my faith, my family, and my journey, and the knowledge that I am enough as I am. And that's really the message that we give to our young people, that there is a space for them to be seen, heard, and supported. And I think there's an expectation as Black people for us to carry ourselves with poise and strength, regardless of the circumstances that we are facing. And so I think the journey starts with uplifting our young people and speaking positivity into them.
You are someone. You are enough. Yeah. I have a mantra I share with my clients who are a lot older than your population. Mm-hmm. But they still need this. You know, they're successful CEOs. They've reached the top of the line. They're entrepreneurs, but yet mm-hmm. they still walk around with the self-doubt, the self-unworthiness. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're the first person in their family to have achieved mm-hmm. this level, mm-hmm. or maybe sometimes the only mm-hmm. person in their family to achieve like this. And I have this mantra that was taught to me over 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was very powerful. And I would like to share it with you.
Okay.
And I would hope that you would figure out how to share it with your youth, because it works if you keep mm-hmm. repeating it. And the mantra is, I am enough.
Mm.
I have enough.
Mm.
I do enough.
Yes. Yes.
And then I add, you were worthy at conception.
Yes.
You didn't have to earn your worth.
Right.
And if people can embrace that, young people could embrace that. If adults right. can embrace that, there's mm-hmm. a possibility
mm-hmm.
that we change mindsets.
Right. Right.
We change mindsets.
And I'll just add to that,
mm-hmm.
to let our young people know, show up as your authentic self with intention. With intention. And be accountable for your actions and be accountable to want to change. And be an active partner in that change.
You said something here that is so beautiful. First off, intention is my favorite word. You set your intention.
Yes.
And then you went to accountability. But I'd like to add in between that, commitment.
Commitment, right. Yeah.
Commitment to get, like, you don't train to be the quarterback in the Super Bowl 3 days before the Super Bowl.
Right.
You set your intention that you're going to play in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You make the commitment to yourself to do the training and the steps.
Right.
And then you have people around you to help you with your accountability, like your organization and like their own souls.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so powerful. Yeah. That is so powerful.
Yeah. And I'll share something to you because I've made a commitment to the staff and the team because they go above and beyond in terms of their dedication and their commitment to not only to their work, but to the organization and to our young people. And so I want to pour into them so that they can pour into our young people. And we had a phenomenal staff training last month. And my development manager shared something with the team that has stuck with me. And she said, honor intent and own impact.
Say that again.
Honor intent and own impact.
That is it. That is it. That is, as a good friend of mine would say, that's everything.
That is everything.
That is everything. So everything you need, audience, to get in touch with Liz and the AFJ people will be in the show notes here. And I'm sure you need donors also, right?
Right.
You need donors. So I'm going to put out a call in my social media among my friends to start making donations your way. Because you have a problem that works. And we're always talking, my friends and I are always talking about what can we do? What can we do?
Right.
Because
right.
it seems like generation after generation after generation.
Right.
It looks the same. It feels mm-hmm. hopeless. Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier in the show, if you're the kind of parent who can wrestle your kid to the ground
mm-hmm.
and keep them out of the system, good for you. But sometimes they're just driving down the street.
Right.
A carload of friends
mm-hmm.
and they're in the system. They didn't do anything. They just had me driving while black.
Right.
So I want to support you in any way I can.
Thank you.
Because what you're doing is magnificent.
I was listening to a podcast 2 weeks ago with Denzel Washington, and he shared three stages of life, but I think we can even apply them to a call of action. The first stage is learn, second stage is earn, and the third stage is return, right?
Mm.
So if you are someone out there that's listening to this podcast and you want to make a difference with our young people and you want to make a difference in the criminal justice space and juvenile justice space, the first step is learning about organizations such as Avenues for Justice. And you can do that by going to our website. And then the second stage is earning. And so it's using your earning power to make more than just a donation. A donation doesn't have to be transactional, doesn't have to be one-off, but it's using your networking space to raise awareness, about what is going on at programs such as Avenues for Justice, and then making that return. And again, that return doesn't necessarily have to be as a donation, but involvement at different levels. Volunteer, reach out to us. We always have volunteer opportunities. We're looking for board members to become brand ambassadors to really amplify our mission, our programming, and our messaging. And so there's different levels to make a return. But I think that given what is going on in our country right now, we really need people to step up and to support movements such as Avenues for Justice and to support our young people. And if you're somebody out there that's listening and you are a business that can offer internship placements or employment opportunities for our young people, please reach out. And if you want to just spend some time with us, we have three locations. So our main courthouse location is inside the Manhattan Criminal Court building. So if you want to come and see the court advocacy component, meaning when a young person shows up in the criminal court building, what do they face and how do they interact with Avenues for Justice? We welcome that. If you want to come to our two community centers where the magic really happens, we open our doors to you.
And where are those?
So we have one center in the Lower East Side on 100 Avenue B, and the street was co-named in 2022 Avenues for Justice Way, because that's our flagship. And our second center is in Harlem on 69 East 130th Street. So we welcome, our doors are always open. Okay. And if there's young people that you know who could benefit from our services, reach out to us as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Liz Frederick, I am so happy to have met you.
I'm so happy that you provided the space for me to just share our wonderful work and share what we're doing and the difference that we are making in New York City. And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, it's my honor and to have the space and to have you in it. As I said earlier, everything you're going to need to know, including how to book her on your own podcast, is going to be in our show notes. I thank you so very much for joining us here on Unshackled Leadership, and we will be in support of you moving forward. We've just completed another episode of Unshackled Leadership, a lantern for Black women. Our goal? To leave you feeling empowered and ready to take your next step with confidence and grace. A huge thanks to our audio engineer, Grammy Award-winning artist and producer, Carolyn Malachi. And to Darren Neplett, who composed our theme music. Your talent makes all of this possible. We're in our third season, so not to miss an episode, make sure you subscribe. Your support helps us grow. I'm your host, Joya Jefferson Nuri. I hope to have you back.